Hello and welcome to the Human Innovation Podcast, the podcast for innovative leaders. I'm your host, Jens Heitland, and today's episode is a comeback episode, a comeback of the Innovation Breakfast Club. Josh, Werner, Dennis, and I met last time on podcast for a breakfast discussion in episode number 138. Josh had the idea last week, hey, let's meet up and chat again together. We recorded this chat where we talked about what happened to all of us personally and business-wise, and we touched a lot of nerves of society and the world in general. Just to name a couple of topics we scratch, how do we ask better questions? How do we build trust? Human-centered businesses and the perspective of time. Enjoy the Innovation Breakfast Club episode with Josh, Werner, Dennis, and myself.
It's been a while. The world was waiting for four old white guys to get together again to talk about stuff. I know Jens is the legend, but like the other three people in dodgy.
Yeah, I must say I haven't been on a podcast or on a recording for a very long time. Actually with you guys, like the last time. Or maybe an interview somewhere.
That's a long time ago. I was just checking before the call how long it is ago. So it was episode 138 on my podcast. Jeez.
And it was like 5 years ago?
And I've published already 222.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. And your podcast is rocking and rolling, right? It's like, I started losing a little bit of track. Like, you still have the single platform, that's a single podcast, right? Because I saw some other interviews happening with other kinds of themes. I might be misunderstanding how you're putting your
all
strategy
in one
together.
Podcast. And it's still all the same.
Yeah.
It's just.
But I mean, I think maybe your themes are a bit different, right? Because it's innovation is still the overarching topic, but there's leadership things that I'm seeing coming through.
Yeah. It's still the same because the angle of innovation I took always is the human part. How do you do that in an organizational setup? And that only works through humans. So there's no difference. I just frame it sometimes differently because people need to understand it, not just in my head.
So it's interesting because I've been, and I'm not a people person. I'm a content person. But in the last 3 years, I've only seen the issues that I ran into be of human cause, which is content is nice, I make things look nice and presentable, but then the humans come in, and this is where the interesting things start to happen.
Yeah.
So it's.
It's always funny. I don't know if it's just swear or if this even is a swear thing, but I remember early in my career when I was still doing a lot of UX, we were always talking about, and I think it's still true to this day, and there's nothing wrong with it, is that usually when you get into a session where you start talking about customers and how you work with people, I mean, most of them are awesome people, right? And especially when you start engaging with them and working with people. But the thing is, you sometimes forget, like Dennis, you say, is like people come in and they destroy things, right? And I think we're at some stage, I had this standing joke that I'm gonna write a book, because it was in the time of that, these catchy kind of book titles, like Designing for Assholes, like to shift the perspective a little bit, because I think sometimes we make this ideal customer, like they're perfect, they're brilliant, but there's so much more to humanity. There's all these angles and perspectives.
Yeah, but that's the point. The point is to fuck it up, right? Is that you can make something, but then when humans interact, it's the point is to break it apart, to make it better constantly. Otherwise, we have nothing to do.
Yeah. Josh, you're silent. What's going on? Can you hear us?
I'm just listening because it's quite fascinating to have us all back in the same virtual room after a number of months,
so much.
maybe even a year and a half, I would say.
Oh yeah.
So I'm sort of just listening and processing. because it's quite something to have us all back in the room, like I've said, but also just to see where everyone has ended up over the last year and a half and what's happened, what's changed. I mean, since we last spoke, I've had the opportunity to meet Dennis in person, to meet Jens in person, to get on a plane and hop halfway across the world to go and join Jens in Spain for a bit, and then spend some time with Dennis in Amsterdam. And then, yeah, unfortunately, I haven't met my fellow South African Vanna in person yet, but that's still got to happen, and I'm sure it might happen this year at some stage or early 2024. But yeah, so I'm really just listening and sort of just absorbing and seeing where and how things have turned out. But I find quite interesting, Vanna, that you sort of asked Jens around also the direction that his podcast has taken, because very much, you know, when we started the Innovation Breakfast Club, it was really like an open canvas. We didn't set very strict bounds on it. And I can still actually remember the first episode that we recorded. And there's always been the same common thread that's pulled through in our different ways of thinking, creative explorations and things like that. So it's also, yeah, that for me is interesting to see how that's all turned out. So yeah, Jens, that's why I've been quiet while everyone's been talking on the call so far.
Yeah, let's do a quick round. I like that approach, Josh. So what has happened to you? You mentioned already a little bit, but let's start with Dennis. We have seen each other quite a bit over the last years, but
not enough.
Well, yeah, agree. But what has happened after the last Breakfast Club with you? Are there any specific things that stand out?
Do you want a practical answer or a very abstract one?
As you wish.
So I think a lot of the conversations, what happened during, after COVID, talking with everybody, I think I got my mind around a lot of the things that I was struggling with. And maybe I would say, well, the biggest steps is the fact that it's not a struggle anymore. It's an accepted part of the stuff that I do. I would say the only next struggle that I might have is translating what I've learned over the last couple of years into practical things. And I'm not as fast as you, Jens. You know, you're doing testing and experimenting on the go and making things reality really, really fast. But I have a incremental approach in my head, which puts a big lag on things. But I'm coming up to a point where I can start to say, well, the things that I see in the landscape of change, I'm calling movement now, because it's just movement. I'm not interested in change. I'm interested in movement, because people and things are moving. And what I do is I try to visualize the path that lies in between movements. And that's I would say, a huge change in the stuff that I'm doing. I'm trying to not put visualization first. I'm trying to put thinking and advisory first, and using visualization as a way to do that. And there's a whole lot of things personally that are just going great. I turned 50.
Yay!
that was a good party. Yes. You were there.
It was.
Yeah.
Vanna.
I also turned 50. That like a milestone vibe. I was just a little bit more relaxed about the 50 thing. I don't want to celebrate too much. I mean, what can I say about the last year? I mean, I think with the last episode, I kind of took a decision to jump into kind of put my entrepreneurship consulting on hold, jumped into a startup. Or let me be careful there. It's not really like a startup pure. It's a bit of a more mature business that I jumped into, with kind of two objectives: to understand a little bit more about what it looks like on that side of the fence, and also get a little bit more of a perspective on customer centricity. That was a great adventure. You're actually catching me in between adventures at the moment, because I wrapped up that adventure actually this week.
Wow.
So and also reflecting on that, a lot of people who watch this will probably also be aware of like the tech industry going through a lot of kind of ups and downs with layoffs. And that in itself was something that I didn't expect to experience. Went through three rounds of that experience, and to see the anguish, to see how leadership tries to deal with it, and you know, how it affects people, how it affects customers, you know, that, so I kind of lived that kind of roller coaster ride. And at the end, I also had to kind of sit down, and I had like these two things that I took away from this experience, which I think was awesome, because I have this trajectory that I'm still working on. Is that number one is that I got exactly what I signed up for. I think I said this to Josh in a separate conversation, is that at some stage you go, you know, this is not great, I'll do it differently. Like, why is this happening? And then when you step out of the experience and you look at what you've just experienced, you go like, man, this is what I signed up for, right? So now I have total understanding and empathy for what happens there. The big thing that I took away from this, and this kind of like latches onto, I think, some of the work that Jens is doing, and is that, you know, I also started doing consulting work again, getting back into the field. And I still think there's a huge challenge out there to understand what it is to really be human-centric and customer-centric. I've sat through a lot of conversations the last couple of months about how people see they're going to shape an organization, how they're going to do different things. And I don't always hear, you know, how it aligns with what the customer actually needs out of this. So that's hopefully going to be my next adventure, is to really understand that. But I mean, I've taken too much of the space here. I think Josh, it's your turn.
Yeah, from one South African sitting on one side of the world to another, and with a German and man from Dutchland, from the Netherlands. It's awesome to be back together, and I'm really fortunate and grateful to have had the opportunity to meet Jens and Dennis in the last year since we last chatted, and a lot has changed in my world, gained some different experiences, and I turned 30 this in the last year as well. So it's a bit crazy to think of what the next chapter looks like. Anyway, enough about the philosophy of life and more down to some practical things that happen. So yeah, beginning of last year, I sort of took a leap of adventure and got on a plane to Spain to go and meet a client that I'd done some work with and met through Jens, an international architecture firm. And it was really that, just a leap of adventure, leap of faith, and saying, cool, let's go and see what might come from this. Ended up spending a couple of months in Spain, really cool team. The Spanish people are extremely friendly, and they have a zest for life that is a lot like South Africans. Van, I'm sure you'll attest to that as well. And so that was really cool to broaden cultural horizons, do some work in a different field, and again, work with the people side of things, but also from a strategy and a brand perspective in a completely different field that I hadn't worked before. And then thought about sort of spending some longer time in Europe and maybe looking to call Europe home. Went back to Amsterdam, or went back to the Netherlands in late September, early October, and spent about 6 weeks there. Spent some really cool time with Dennis, got to see his studio that he's sitting in right now, got to look through the camera that he might bring out, got to see his big printer in the background, and then also got to link up with the ends again, which was cool. And that was also a really cool experience. Got to also connect with Rule, who is in the broader ecosystem and network that Jens has brought together. And then came back to South Africa and sort of thought long and hard about where I wanted to be in the world, types of projects that I wanted to work on, people that I wanted to work with, etc. And that's led to me joining a startup in Stellenbosch, South Africa, which is, for those who aren't familiar with Stellenbosch, it's about half an hour from Cape Town. And the project is really around addressing internet connectivity and providing fast township fiber into townships in South Africa in the first case, and then into Africa over the long term. But yeah, so sort of right the way around the world, a whirlwind trip over the last 12 months. And it's sort of interesting how sometimes things culminate at a specific point and then say, okay, well, this is the right time for the here and now. And so we'll see where this next little adventure leads. But yeah, that's a short update from my side of things. But Jens, tell us a bit about what's happened in your world over the last 12 months.
The last 12 months? Yeah, a lot. A lot and nothing at the same time. I think it's even wider than the last 12 months. Since we recorded our last breakfast episode, that was the time when I was still living in Germany due to personal reasons. And these personal reasons have then as well made me to move to Spain. So that's where we met Josh in early 2022. Worked a lot with different organizations in different fields. And one of the things, and that's maybe where Werner, I lost you at least a little bit. What I've seen, and it was part of my theme all the time, innovation in organization only happens if you let it happen. And it's not about the process, it's more about the humans in organization. And over the last, I would say over the last 1.5 years, that's even stronger so than what I've ever seen. So that's why I added as well to the podcast the name of Human Innovation, because I think we need to go more into the human aspect in driving this. So I've been working with extremely large organizations, and on the other side as well with startups, leaders in startups who struggle innovating through the humans they have inside of the organization. Because one example, I've worked with a startup, and this startup has grown over the pandemic, and they have never met in person. So the humans have slightly different connections. And Josh, we have seen that when I picked you up at the train station, and we have first time met each other in person, and then having a couple of beers, seeing you finishing your first marathon, like these stories that are connecting you in a completely different way than in a digital ecosystem. So seeing this as well in large organizations, they hugely struggle today. Some organization, I guess you have heard that in the news, like push everyone back to the office for 4 days, 5 days, 2 days, 1 day. There are different ways of dealing with that. And a lot of organizations struggle with that. And linking that to the human innovation part, I think that's something we need to figure out for all of us. What is the right mix? Is there one thing, or is it something which you need to do individual? Because everyone is in a different cycle of their lives. Every organization is in a different cycle. And that's what I've spent the last year basically on, is figuring out what that means for me. So we moved then due to financial reason and business reasons to the Netherlands. Now living in the Netherlands, close to Dennis, almost what I did it in 22 minutes with bike, which is awesome. But as you said, we're not seeing us often enough. But one of the big things I have done over the last year was starting a startup next to what I do with the other business. And this startup is about leadership education for startups. So we want to build the Duolingo of startups, of leadership. So how do we help a leadership get fast and learning leadership on the fly? That's a bit our theme. And I'm doing this now with a couple of startups in a test environment, with a couple of accelerators and investors in test environments. And it's awesome to see the eagerness of startup founders and startup leaders and managers to want to learn this. Because what I have seen, or I see in large corporate, still on the same angle, is in large corporate, everyone thinks they know how to lead. They are 20 years in their job and 20 years in a leadership role, and still see things like 20 years ago, or like 10 years ago, like 5 years ago. But 5 years ago and today is a different world. The world has changed so dramatically. And yes, it has not changed in one angle, but it has changed from a leadership approach. Just giving you one example, leading people in a digital environment where you have distributed teams, or being in the office, having them sitting next to you 24/7, which was the case before, is completely different. And I can tell you, large organizations struggle with that extremely. And I just see a huge angle. If we educate the leaders which are building new businesses, they will build better businesses by learning to lead in a different way. And then we go back to innovating. They will innovate with people in mind. That links to you, Werner. People centricity, customer centricity, and in the end, we will just have better lives if we get into that direction. So that's a little bit what I am. That's why I'm speaking way more about leadership, because I just see if we don't figure out the root cause problem of innovation, which is leadership, trust, community, culture in an organization, it's still not happening. You can have the best processes, whatever, or the best people even. If a leader can still fuck it up, then it's not worth it to do it. So that's why I focus more on leadership. Long answer. Thoughts?
Love it.
So he has a thought. So Dennis, you spoke about sort of the repositioning and the thinking, and I've obviously had a longer term view of that journey that you've been on. And it's awesome to hear how you've sort of shaped and where you are ended up at the moment now around movement. And Jens, what you've just shared around sort of the challenges that organizations face around one, thinking differently, two, encouraging people to collaborate across generations, and then three, the leadership side of things, is the link potentially between where Dennis is in the world at the moment around this movement side and where you are going with the startup that you are shaping is energy. And what I mean by that is it's around how does energy flow between different humans, so people, but also teams inside of organizations. And that all really sort of comes down to movement. And Dennis, it sort of reminds me of something that we worked on, not related to, you know, human-centered innovation or organizations, or that, but sort of that the wave of change. And what does that then become, and how does that then shift? And that sort of then ties into what Vanna, you were saying around your experience over the last sort of 12 months and the team that you've worked with, is around sort of affecting that from a human-centered design perspective. And it's just interesting to see, again, these different forms of synergy, but different spaces that, you know, they're unrelated, but there's this concept of one, human interactions, two, change, which is like, what do you do once you create the human interactions? And then three is, how does that then play out as you sort of build organizations, build teams, consult as a strategist, build, you know, creative plans, et cetera, et cetera.
That is interesting. And I totally agree. It's all in the combination between what Jens is doing and what I is doing is that in between flow of energy is a good catch. So I think it's interesting to see that we are as four people going to our own respective spaces. And I want to know a little bit more about the space you're in currently in now, Josh, because I don't have a good grip on that now. But we are all value creators, and we create value in a different in all different ways. And it's interesting to see how when we get together, the different disciplines we own and the experience we have, they come together in a way that I would say we should be put to work to solve something. But we as four unique value creators doing totally different things in an innovation space, you know, trying to help people to either innovate or improve, develop, explore. I think those are all different paths that we curate. I like the word curate because we've been working on that a lot, Josh, and seeing how we become the people that guide, help other people guide through the paths that they need to walk. And the manner they walk the path, you know, that's up to the person that's guiding them. And in that sense, if you get back to the value of what we do, is that we all guide people down that path in a different way. And I might pose the question to see how we might be better at this as opposed to before COVID or starting with the innovation breakfast, because we have more experience, we have some perspective on other things. And if we restart the innovation breakfast now, it's like, how would we direct what we're doing towards creating value as a, not a talking group, but a problem value creation group?
So maybe before we chat about that, just a quick, in true innovation breakfast style, I wouldn't be holding or playing my part if I didn't drop a quick quote in around something linked to energy. So Nikola Tesla says, if you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. And again, to make that, you know, applied or practical in the different spaces that we're in, it's really about listening better, asking better questions, and being more attuned to the interactions that we have with people, whether we're designing products from an overall creative flow perspective, or we're designing teams, or designing messaging, whatever you want to do it. But I just thought that that's a nice sort of a cherry on top with regards to the thoughts that we're sharing around energy. But Dennis, back to the question that you posed.
I love that. I'm directly jumping in, connecting these things. One thing I have learned for myself even more so the last year is the perspective of time in all of this. I'm, like Dennis was already kind of scratching, I'm a fast mover in a lot of things. But what I have learned to recognize as well, some things need more time than we often think as entrepreneurs. And linking this to what we could do to the world and how we could combine our superpowers and what we see happening in the world. I think it's also about finding the right time for us, finding the right timing next to that, and then looking into what is needed in which point in time for specific individuals and or organization. Because if we, I mean, Vanna, you have worked in the big consulting company like I did in between. There, it's one fits all. It's not about what is the right timing and how do you do that on a human-centric level and how do you help an individual doing things. It's more about how can you push as fast as possible and stay scale as long as possible and earn money. It's not about the impact you do. It's not about the timing. It's not about the individuals and the human part. Thoughts about that, Vanna?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into trouble with my consulting friends, but there's a definite, I mean, the thing is, I think what I've learned about, and I've actually met with them recently to have conversations. A lot of it is about scale. So being away from the big consulting space and doing what I'm doing, the big difference there is scale, right? So, and I think the challenge there is also that a lot of customers, and I've experienced this, they expect that scale, right? There's an element of certainty around it. So if it's really big, it's going to be better. And I think that's a challenge that smaller consulting teams face, right? Because we are bringing a smaller kind of more human-centric approach. Because the thing is, the only thing that I have in my pocket is the fact that I can have a meaningful conversation, connect with people in a more meaningful way. And it kind of brings me back to just the one thought that you mentioned around, and this is just an example, and it's not key to your original question, but this whole topic around remote, right? And bringing people into the office. And I've seen it in my own space. I've played now with the kind of remote work essence now for the last year and a half, 2 years. And lots of times when it comes to remote work or hybrid work, it's not the actual way of work that's a problem. It's the actual organizational culture at the bottom that's a problem. And I think you can bring as many big organizations or consultancies in. If you don't fix that
100%.
Issue, doesn't matter. You can file everybody into your little office, cover your rent, whatever you want to do. It's not going to make a difference. So, yeah, I think it is. It is the scale thing. There is still a tendency. I mean, I'll leave it here. But Jens, I think the problem is that it's this. We kind of sometimes fool ourselves. The usual suspects that kind of break down, things in the organization is still here. I just dealt with something yesterday where silos, like people can't work across silos. They're in their own little worlds. They cannot break through. And I'm going, one of the things, and I had a conversation with a client about this, is that I have the ability to jump between that, right? So I can help connect. And then, work with a couple of teams where they're working on a product where they are unable to express the value proposition. Now imagine you're investing in a leader and you have people working in your teams, working every day, brilliant, talented people, but they cannot express the value proposition of what they're building.
Yeah.
And that's small things that maybe a bigger organization or consultancy will overlook, but that's the small things that I think are super important.
It's the smallest thing that is most important because it drives everything. You can have everybody do everything and organize it in the greatest way. But if they don't know why they're doing it, we come back to the circles. We come back to all those type of things that we know. But the difficulty lies in the fact that we don't get to take or claim the time to be able to spend time on solving that. And I would say I'm learning that the reason, I would say one of the reasons why we're unable to express these things, we've never learned how to do that. Because we're, you know, you're being, once you get educated over time, you get a little bit more perspective. But it's so strange that you need to experience the idea that you need to reprogram your value over time instead of knowing that you're supposed to. You know, I would say in indigenous cultures, you know that you're going to go through phases in life because you're being taught to and you're expecting the phases of other people as well. And it's so interesting to see how we don't get taught that. We get taught you need to choose a specific thing and be really good at it. And then you'll be valuable in the grand scheme of things. And it's difficult to get to a point where people are really able to express their value.
And I tend to waffle on for too long, right? But the one thing I just want to try and add in a short way is that the one thing that is sitting in the back of my mind for especially the last 6 months is that seeing what I've seen in the organization where I worked is that, and I'll say this, is that people think collaboration is this mess. And I think it kind of aligns a little bit with your leadership stuff, Jens, is like, there's this kind of amoeba in an organization that drives things. And what I'm thinking and believing in, and this scares people because how does it scale, is that it's all down to the individual. It goes to the core of the individual in your organization, because what I've seen recently is that you require people in your organization to know where the organization's going. And I'm not talking about the fluffy mission, vision, that's important. I make a lot of like living on that. That's super important. But if your team members aren't seeing that the organization is in trouble and they can't course correct, or, you know, how do you run an organization? Then what happens is people just focus on their own little remit. Like, oh, I need to make sure I do 10 phone calls today and I'm covered. But does it really move the company forward? And that comes down to, you know, how does leadership enable that? Does leadership look at individuals in the organization? How do you manage that? It's complex, I know, but that's the challenge, because how else do you lead and kind of empower folks, you know, in the organization?
Yeah, and I would say it's hard to know when to start where.
So he has when to start where, but there's also that great, I can't remember exactly, I've been racking my brain now around where this quote comes from, but it's got saying around, you know, the value of experience and is knowing which screw to turn. It's something along the lines of sort of, you know, being or going through the motions in different scenarios or different spaces and being able to selectively identify and intentionally identify rather, not selectively, which screw to turn to create that change. And that sort of links back to, you know, Jens and Dennis, what you were both talking about, but also Dennis, your first question is, you know, what has changed since COVID has come about? And what would we now do as the four of us, if we were thinking about creating an innovation breakfast, how would we share some insights or learnings or our own context to help other people go through that? And potentially it's also interesting to think about, you know, we've had these 3 years where the four of us met during COVID hard lockdown right around the world. And inside of that, the world was a radically different place. How much of the world has rolled back to pre-COVID, i.e. what parts of organizations haven't changed because of COVID, which parts have changed, how have people's mindsets changed, how has generational interaction changed? And that also then vanitized to your concept of remote work. And it's quite interesting to think about, you know, over a longer term period, Jens, you were talking about time earlier and things taking time. What are the things that change quickly and are fast movers? What are the things that take more gradual things to change? And then ultimately, what are the most important things that people should be focusing and spending time on? Because I think sometimes the incentives that we are given as humans to spend time on things are not geared towards creating positive change. It's because change is geared and a super loaded term, especially inside of organizations, of, you know, KPIs that people are set for, you know, for Vanna, for your example, creating silos, for example. Silos, in my opinion, are perpetuated because KPIs are considered only in their silos and not organization-wide. Yeah. And that's when you're talking about big orgs. But, you know, how do we start thinking about this more connected space? And then it links back to, Dennis, what you were saying around sort of people looking at things in different ways and bringing in different types of thinking into the mixing pot or boiling pot or whatever you want to call it, but allowing and then making the space to also translate and understand what has been brought to the table, why it's been brought to the table, how might we use this in this specific scenario, and not simply just ignoring something because at first glance it's got no relevance to me.
Yeah, for me, linking that to the fast-paced world where we are in right now, I think sometimes we just need to go back to basics. And that means, hey, let's talk to each other. Let me be interested in you as a human being and what you're doing outside of the work. That's what I've seen over the last half year, specifically with public companies. They're jumping and trying to sprint from quarter to quarter just to, and that links to your incentives, Josh, just to deliver the numbers they have promised to the shareholders. Has nothing to do with humans. It has only to do with what they promised to the shareholders. And it's only about growth over growth over growth. That's how public companies are measured. Has nothing to do with, hey, how important is the product you're selling? Do you really solve a problem in this world? Do you help other people to be more successful, develop whatever? And then you see inside of a lot of organizations, things where people get kicked out, people get fired, the big tech layoff. It's only because of the shareholders. Most of the companies, if you take the big ones, they're all profitable. They have been profitable before. They make money. It's not that they don't make money. They make impact in this world. They're just getting rid of 30% of the stuff because they're not delivering as they promised. And they could deliver higher. And that's the business cycles where we are in. And I think that goes back to Josh again. How do we change the incentive structures in our whole capital society or capitalistic society, which is, in my eyes, nothing bad with that. I think there are benefits of having that. But how do we bring the humans back into that? And how do we do this with a more human focus where people are front and center of what we're doing. And then the business is, or the result of the business is the result of the people enjoying themselves, enjoying their development and having fun with each other across silos. Because for me, if we take the silo thing, it's only because of power play inside of organization. It has nothing to do with that people don't like each other. It's just about, hey, this is my group. This is my target. This is my budget. And I'm not giving anything of that to you. As bigger the organization, as more you see that. And that's why I focus so much on these things. How do you break this down early on instead of startups? Because if you're capable of doing that early on, you can prevent that from happening if you build the right incentive structures.
Okay, so that's a human thing, right? So let me throw in something content-wise. So I asked this question to my kids yesterday at the dinner table. It's like, if you could get a map you can choose two maps. One has all the answers and one has all the questions. Which one would you choose? And they thought not very, very long and said, well, I want to have the one with the questions. And it's like, oh, that's good. But why? It's like, yeah, they can try to figure out what the answers are. And if you have the answers, we don't know what the questions are. We don't know what to do. It's like, and then I said, okay, so what happens when you learn for a test? So you get all the answers out of something that you know, you get a map, and then you get tested. And then the weird thing is people want to have a map that has all the answers, you know, because they want to follow it towards a specific, I would say, successful end result that might go to a next phase. But giving them all the answers means that at some point you don't think anymore. And I would say that's a lot of the things that are happening now is that we try to curate and make things more compact to move quicker, because everybody's still saying nothing very different than so many years ago. We need to accelerate. So if you truly say accelerate over the last 50 years, then we might spin out of control, because everybody's constantly saying we need to accelerate, accelerate, accelerate. It's like, you know, and there need to be people who say, and you say you might move and operate a little bit faster, Jens. I tend to do the exact opposite. I'm a retarder. I make things go slow because I ask questions and which are difficult to answer, which need time, and you need to claim time to start to do and start to figure out. And in that sense, I'm posing a question that do we really need to change the cycles? Because it's difficult to change those type of things. Or do we get to help people to move through them in a better way, a more conscious way, more aware of what's happening, which means you need to make them look at the bigger picture to understand what's happening. And that's a question to us to figure out how, based on content and knowing and becoming aware of what is happening around us and what might follow, and how do you react to that? How that could drive us to combine our thinking to see how we can help people move through content.
Two things, Dennis. Fascinating that your kids are already having the opportunity with a person like yourself to have the opportunity to think about the question that you just posed. Because I think it talks to the way that the digital world has been designed. The digital world, I'm just talking about platforms, has been designed around answers. It hasn't been designed around questions. It's all about getting you towards destination. So if you think about Spotify is all about, how do I get you to spend more time playing music and listening to podcasts and consuming content through the platform? They want you to have the answers. So they give you a discovery playlist, which is where the majority of people discover new things. They're already providing you with answers. They're not allowing us as users to go and question certain things when we land on the platform. Yeah. And why that is concerning for me is because we're moving to this space now where humans, we trust the recommendations, so we trust the algorithms a lot more than we trust ourselves. So we don't give ourselves the opportunity to question things at a deeper level. We do question things, but we question things at almost like a very surface level, things we don't go a step deeper, because we inherently want to find answers. And again, this goes way back to sort of educational structures, all of those types of things that you design to arrive at a destination. It's the same concept when something is graded, you get a grading mark. But they don't necessarily tell you the logic behind that grading mark.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, I think that it's got to do with not necessarily changing cycles or structures. It's got to do with the deeper way that we design things. And that can be taken in a number of different directions.
Yeah.
Werner.
No, I mean, they're saying what I'm thinking, but what I have seen, though, like coming down to questions, is also the quality of the questions that you ask, right? I've seen in some of the work that I've done in the last couple of months is that there is definitely this, this kind of approach to like, I'm an observer. So I will observe behavior and then act according to what I see rather than engaging with people and asking questions. And that is hard, right? Because you have to practice asking good questions. And I think it comes down to how really curious are you? I had a conversation with my wife, she's going to kick my ass, this week, where they were exploring a fundamentally really complex topic. And she's like, and I said, like, what can you do to become curious about this topic? And that's hard to do, right? And as soon as you kind of switch that on, you start shifting things. And also just to riff on what Dennis said about the questions and the destination, I think good questions can have different answers. And my answer might be different to what Josh's answer would be. And what's really cool about it is that if you have a trajectory of a direction where you go and you ask these interesting questions, you get the cool answers, you might end up somewhere where you didn't expect to be. And I think what happens is that we fiddle all these little recipes and then we bake a cake and then the cake flops, or we make the cake, but there's nothing special because we are working in this framework and we get exactly what we want. Sometimes we don't because something goes wrong, you know, economy or whatever. But I wonder if I was just thinking when you guys were talking, like, are we too scared to be daring these days? Like, are we so scared that we're not going to make the target, that we're aiming too low? And we go like, what if we surpass this? Like, what if we do something that's really kind of out there? You know? So yeah, I don't have the answer. I just have the questions.
Well, yeah, I think you have more, but it's just hard to just throw out, because we are, I would say, a product of all our experiences. And if we get posed to a problem, we start to ask questions. We observe, we listen, we start to look for things, and we automatically go into something that's going to solve it in a, I would say, more interesting way than when you're stuck within a framework. We have our own framework, and where we have a little bit more space to work with things, I would say, because that our intent is still, and that's why I resonate on what you said, that you intentionally identify. That's a good thing that you just said, Josh, because it's the intent that you put in what you are trying to identify, which makes it different from wandering around, because you can start to explore, which is a great thing to be able to do. But at some point, you need to bring it back to an intent that you're going to identify something towards an end. And it's interesting to see how we are able to do that. And when we break down innovation, we have an innovation breakfast, but it's actually what we're doing is the innovation breakdown. We're breaking everything down. To help other people build their renewal and to build their stuff up, because it's so hard to figure out where to start. And if you know what the building blocks are, and you can figure out you can start from anywhere. But some spaces are more interesting to start than other ones, but they take more time. It's difficult to claim time for that. And it's just interesting to see how the difference between our approaches comes together very nicely, I would say, in a dialogue. The only thing we might try to figure out how to put in is a little bit more friction.
I agree.
To see how we can challenge each other to be critical and mirror towards opposite things, to try and find where the boundaries are of where we get into a discussion and maybe even an argument.
Josh,
yeah, amen to that.
Josh, go for it.
Yes, you have something to provoke that potentially. Is it's partly the world has become too agreeable, and that's because younger generations have never built something physical. They've always lived in something physical that's been built by previous generations. So I've been thinking a lot about this. Virgil Abloh has a great quote which I'll share just now. But essentially, what at its point is, it's saying that, you know, architects of previous generations built cities. But what does it mean for young architects to not build cities and to create change? Because that was the marker when you know, previous generations built these environments that we live in and that we now call home, and we live in these great cities. That was built by people that lived before our time. And a lot of, you know, even the team sitting, or the people sitting in this call today, a lot of the stuff that we've built has been around digital systems and not necessarily big physical infrastructural changes that have shaped the way that our lives work. And so that's maybe just something to think about is, you know, what does it look like for a kid who's 15 today in 2023 to imagine that they're going to be a city planner and design an entirely new city in 10 years' time when they turn 2025 or 2020, when they turn 25 in, what's that, 2038?
Yeah, I love that, linking that to what Werner was saying, more the from a risk perspective. I think that not everyone has the risk appetite at all. And just giving you the real life example with Joss, jumping into an airplane, going to Spain, not knowing what's going to happen, and then staying there for more than 3 months. Obviously, that was a kind of calculated risk, but something a lot of people in this world would never do. And that's just one of the examples where we need to think about this a bit more. What are the risks we are taking, and are they really risk, or are they already so calculated that you know it's not really a risk? And I think comparing that with Josh, you didn't know at all what's going to happen. Maybe you go home in a week. Maybe you will never go home. That was the risk level where you have been in. But I think if we link this to us as individuals and or the organizations we work with or in, what are we truly risking? I see a lot of organizations, they say they are risky in things, but then you look under the hood and there's zero risk. On an individual level, there's zero risk. Everything is de-risked and everything. And then on an organizational level, there's no risk as well. Everything is safe because they need to deliver towards that. And that's just what I see a lot as well from a personal development opportunity angle. Who is really taking risk? I may be a little bit extreme, at least if you ask my mom, because I've lived in 3 countries over the last 3 years. And a lot of people are saying, you're completely nuts and that's super risky. But I'm just saying, hey, this is my life and I'm just doing this. One thing is, it's fun. Sometimes I don't have a choice. And the third time is, I just believe that something good will happen in the end. But that's, I mean, it's faith. It's risk seekingness. I have no idea how to explain that. But I think if we look into innovating, if we look into developing ourselves and organizations, we need to go more into this and finding out what that is. That links us back to the questions as well. What are the questions we truly ask us?
Yep.
Are these the easy questions, or are these the difficult question which you put in a table if you have a team meeting?
Yeah. If I may, I want to be a little bit like Josh, and I want to recommend not a book, but a podcast. So Josh, kind of like in the vein of your previous kind of adventure with reverse mentorship, a younger colleague actually recommended this podcast to me in a meeting. And it comes down because I think the risk that you're talking about, Jens, is also risks that we take in society. So the podcast, just before I forget, is The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling. Really well produced. Give it a listen. And it comes down to, I mean, and I've lived this now for a little while, like there's a lot of authoritarianism going on in Europe, on this side of Europe. We know what's happening in the Ukraine. We've seen what happened a couple of presidents ago in the States, and what might happen in the future. But then also, I had a conversation with someone in Barcelona where we were really having a debate. And it kind of brings me back to what we were talking about. What you were mentioning is that we are all agreeing. Because in a way, we're having this podcast, we're all agreeing with each other, like high fives. where we actually, it's actually more interesting to start talking to people where we disagree with each other, right? And I think we've moved into a space, and I see this with companies and brands trying to play it safe and cancel culture and all these things, where the biggest risk of what's happening is not that anybody gets like disempowered or whatever, is that we are not actually having the debates anymore. And that's not democracy. So, and I think you can see it going, like going down into teams, into the organization, but then also in society. We like, there's this ideal state that we're trying to move into where we all agree. And fundamentally that's a challenge. I mean, I'm not saying like invite all the neo-Nazis for your next barbecue, but
no,
you need to kind of, we need to have conversations and share really what we feel and ask questions about like, why is this? Or, but that's very hard to do. Very hard to do.
But something's growing in me. And it grew when Jens said appetite for risk. And because I have a background in hard rock metal and stuff like that, I instantly go with my mind to an appetite for destruction. And at the time in the end 80s, it was the end of the 80s when the Guns N' Roses album came out, Appetite for Destruction, it felt destructive. The whole album cover was offensive. It needed to be redone because it was a monster going over a fence that was going to attack a robot that was raping a nun, which was something you could absolutely not do now. But that was the front of the Appetite for Destruction. And in order for sales to make it better, they had to do a different cover, and they came up with the cross with the skulls on it. And it's like, but at that time, they were hungry. They were just hungry for ripping things apart. And the agreeability we just touched upon of stuff happening in the world, I'm seeing, you know, I'm also a victim of stuff going on Instagram and going through things. But sometimes you see some light in people who reflect on things. And I saw a mother who was reflecting on the fact that in the 80s or in the 90s, when somebody was sick, she would say, oh, here you have two aspirin and a cup of tea downstairs. No fucking around. You go to school. That's what they said in the 80s. And now you have those parents who are like, you need to express how you're feeling. We worked on that, right? I said, you don't think you need to go to school? Okay, that's fine. And what you like? You like a grande latte and an iPhone 14? Okay, yes. Okay, we'll talk about that. It's like, it's totally different. And that's, in that sense, it's bringing home to me the lack of appetite. And let's not say destruction, but I would say, I like the appetite for destruction. If you look at it in the perspective of saying that you need to destroy things in order to make place for something new or find a path towards something that you might do want to do next, you need that. Otherwise, you won't survive. Otherwise, you stay stuck in one place constantly. And you know, you have those retreats where they're having men come together to get back in touch with their manly self, their destructive self. You know, it's almost like Fight Club. They're trying to get back into with primal feelings. And it's not that I'm saying we need to go towards that, but it's trying to figure out a way to, with the tone and state of the world as it is today, to figure out what tools we do have to navigate towards analyzing something and making space for something new, because there's a different thing we don't get to have an appetite for destruction, but there needs to be something else.
How do we wrap this whole conversation up?
Let's zoom at home. Maybe a closing thought from each of us could be cool as a touch point to sort of signify the reignition of the OG Breakfast Club.
I think I just gave mine, and that's it. So I think the I resonate with everything that has a has any. No, I don't agree. Come on, guys. we need to find some space and get to a point where we're able to take people along because they need to be taken along and then see that they can do it themselves. You know, and that's, I would say that's a real need. It's difficult to sell, you know, because companies like say they're risk free. Oh no, we don't want to do that. Takes it into a different tangent. It's like, we need that. We need that. But it's difficult to figure out how to get to in a space that you get to do that with people. So for me, I would say one of the biggest things we could do with our combined intelligences and experiences is to see if we can get to those spaces and get people into those spaces and also out. So that's my two cents on that.
Werner.
I can't be as lyrical as Dennis, but for me, it's like as a rap, like at the end of what Dennis said, I know he went into into the manliness of the forest and all that kind of stuff. I would just bring it back to say, like, reframe question, like ask.
Is he stuck?
And we spoke about asking why, but something that I see really working so awesome in a lot of work that I've done recently is like asking or questioning why you're doing something in the first place. So, you know, because I'll give you an example. I was working with a team and we were kind of exploring how they do login for this thing, how customers will experience it. And we were really kind of focusing on like the latest things. People were coming up with great ideas. And then someone said, why the hell should I do this in the first place? And it shifted the whole conversation to really ask like, why are we actually doing this? And I think sometimes we are so stuck in the trench doing the thing. Are we not actually going, like, where are we going and why are we actually doing this?
Josh. Number of things, but I'm going to just pick one. And that is, we shouldn't take time for granted. And the reason why that has become so important and apparent over the last 3 years is that we did take time for granted. And that means that we are in a situation today where we could have potentially avoided some of the decisions that we're having to make as a society if we'd been more intentional with the choices that we'd made. And that is sort of the framing that I've taken away from today's conversation, is because beauty and rebirth that Dennis was talking about, challenging destruction, what Werner just spoke about questioning, and a number of other points inside of the conversation, is that I think that we've taken time for granted in different shapes and forms over the last couple of years as a global society, that's maybe playing out in the way that it is today because of the decisions that we've made.
Beautiful.
My one is trust. Trust, and first and foremost, trusting yourself. Because one of the things I see and I believe is if you are asking a question, you need to be confident. And that means you need to trust yourself to be confident over time. And then that links as well towards taking the risk and being on a journey that's maybe not clear step by step. And the self-confidence is something everyone can work on a day-to-day basis. So if everyone in the whole world would work on their own self-confidence, being able to speak up, asking the difficult questions, finding out how yourself relate, how I self relate to the world, but being confident in being in that space will change a lot of things. So that's my two cents. Let's keep it at that. It was awesome to see you all again. Thank you for organizing, Josh. Super, super good.
Yeah.
We should do that more
often. Much appreciate.